This is the Scorebook Live Today podcast, a podcast about high school sports in the state of Washington. It's Thursday, October 24th. It's week 8 of the high school football season. And today I'm joined, as always, by analyst, columnist, former NBA player Dan Dickow in Spokane, coming off another successful media day down in Southwest Washington for the basketball season, and then reporter Todd Millis in Tacoma. Thanks for taking the time, guys. How you doing?
Absolutely. Things are going great. I'm enjoying these media days, and we'll touch on that in a little bit. But, you know, it's funny because I keep following all the features and articles that you guys are writing, and it's hard to believe football season is past the halfway mark.
Yeah, I was just telling Andy this. I can't believe we're heading into week 8 already. I mean, we're going to blink eyes and we're going to be in the playoffs. It's gone really fast. I think a lot of that has to do is we've been busy. And you know, when you get busy, things seem to go by pretty quickly. So week 8, there's a lot of important games, and we'll touch on those in the second half of the segment. But yeah, it's flown by.
Like you mentioned, Todd, second segment, we're going to go deep on where we will be this week. In around the state at some really good football games. But before then, a quick rundown. We're going to talk about the extraordinary things coaches will do to win games. That'll segue into a nice story Todd put together this week. And then we'll go deep on what's going on with these Scorebook Live Hoops media days. So without further ado, a very interesting story out of St. Louis area. The football program Cardinal Ritter suspended its program for the season, fired its entire coaching staff after it was discovered that the head football coach had disguised a suspended player for the first game of their season as a freshman with a different name and a different jersey number. There will be no playoffs for this team who was previously undefeated, and they are going to have to start from scratch, which begs the question, one, have you guys ever heard anything like this? And two, where does this rank on the things that coaches do to win that might border on kind of crazy?
Well, I think it's ridiculous that the coach did this. I think, you know, high school sports, you absolutely want to win. But at the same time, you're molding young men to be very good stewards of character and prepare them to be successful people outside of sports in the rest of their life. And if you're showing and sharing with your kids how to cheat and that it's okay to cheat and that you're then going to cover up your cheating, that's setting a bad precedence. That's setting a bad example. You know, and you go on with the story, the administration at the school canceled the rest of the season and fired the entire coaching staff, or at least put them on leave. You know, I think putting them on leave is fair. I think canceling the season entirely would be a tough pill to swallow if I was one of the kids that had no idea that was going on with the one incident that you're speaking of. But I was never involved or had a coach that did anything like that. I mean, obviously, I played for some coaches that I don't want to say they were win-at-all-cost coaches, but they were very motivating. They were very, I don't know if aggressive is the right word, but they were very push the envelope. Let's see what we can do. Let's prepare ourselves. But they would never go across the line and cheat like this story.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, the motivation to try and gain an advantage. I mean, to me, it kind of comes in levels. I mean, there's the scouting report stuff we talked about in Arizona earlier this year, where coaches, you know, a coach was sharing his scouting report with opposing coaches on his own team. You know, I know coaches are paranoid by people taping their practices. So, I mean, that stuff seems to be okay. It's sort of acceptable. There's the whole ineligible player, you know, and I don't really understand, you know, whether coaches play ineligible players on purpose or not. Obviously, the case in St. Louis, it came out that it was on purpose. I think some coaches, you know, especially when you have a large program, don't know the ins and outs of all their players. There was actually on the flip side of this. This was probably 7 or 8 years ago when Clover Park's football team had one of their rare, really good seasons. They were pretty much in the playoffs, and the last week of the regular season, a kid comes in and he's talking to the coach Taz Randall, and he's an out of state transfer, and says, hey, by the way, I just celebrated whatever birthday or whatever. And Taz kind of went, oh no. Had known that he immediately recognized that this kid was too old to be playing high school athletics. I mean, they're literally the week before the playoffs. And Taz reports it. It's good to know that there's some coaches when they're in a situation like this, they do the right thing. It's crazy because I was trying to think of this, the craziest situation I can remember as a sports writer at the Tribune. And I remember that there was a coach somewhere in the area here that actually was a varsity baseball coach and inserted himself in the lineup. And I finally found this.
Are you serious?
You've got to be kidding.
You've
got to be kidding.
I finally found the story. It was a small school game, and actually the North Mason coach got in trouble in this same game because he played a foreign exchange student on purpose who was ineligible just to gain an advantage, and their team was put on probation. But that paled in comparison to what Eatonville's Corey Harmon did, and they played a doubleheader that day. It was in 1998. And he was a 19, the crazy thing is he's a 19-year-old varsity coach, so he probably looked pretty young. And he inserted himself as the starting pitcher for the second game of the doubleheader. And the North Mason coach didn't know who he was. He put a fake name, a fake year. The assistant coach went up and gave him the lineup card, and he went out and pitched 5 innings. I think he got shelled, too, which was the funny thing. It didn't give him real an advantage because he couldn't get the kids out at North Mason. And then shortly after the game, I think, people kind of sensed something was going on, and it came out where Corey was the coach, and was immediately terminated. So, I mean, there are crazy stories like this that pop up now and then, but like Dan said, it's almost like they poured bleach on this, and this is a very respected, accomplished small school program in St. Louis, one that I think that was ranked number one by a certain media organization in the country. So, I mean, the equivalent would be like if Kings or, something along those lines decided to do something like this. So, but it seems a bit extreme to me to just sort of penalize the whole team, wipe out the whole season, and who knows where it goes from here. It's certainly a crazy story that's come across a different part of the country.
And these sanctions that the school Cardinal Ritter self-imposed was, could be seen, as an overcorrection. That's a pretty big move to cancel your entire season, and how many kids and families that affects, and teams in the area. But the Missouri State High School Activities Association, according to the St. Louis Post, I believe, which is this where the story first ran, accepted these self-imposed sanctions. But the sticking point for me is that, covering high school sports and being around high school sports, the biggest thing that you hear, one of the bigger things you hear about, coaches and parents complaining about is transfers. And a lot of that kind of happens. The coach isn't necessarily involved in transfers, even in, the most blatant scenarios. It has more to do with the parents. It has more to do with folks associated with certain programs, certain outside programs that aren't involved in the school. But the idea, as somebody who is on the sidelines for football games every week, the idea that there would be a player, essentially an unknown player that would go off like this and this would try to be pulled off is almost comical. I mean, we have cameras trained on every play that happens on the sidelines. And so I just, the gall of this. I mean, Todd, can you imagine covering a game, up in the Seattle area and you see a kid who is this freshman? We just at Scorebook Live, we just released our top freshmen and sophomores in the state. The idea that the most accomplished small school program in the area would do this and kind of think to get away with it. It's almost a Scooby-Doo level hijinks.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It is a high risk, medium reward move on that by that coaching staff. And I will say this, I know that there's sort of an outrage with the parents and the players on this team. It's hard for me to also believe that the parents and the players, didn't know what was going on, especially now. The backstory here that to give a little more breadth to this is this is a young man that was suspended in the state championship game the year before, or ejected. So by Missouri state rules, he had to sit out the first game of the next year. So I know some of those returners probably knew he was not supposed to be playing, and in that situation, I know they're kind of between a rock and a hard place. You know, what do I do? I know this is wrong, but coach is letting it happen. What do we do? It's just a mess all the way around. And I don't know what this coach was doing, and I sure as heck don't know what this coach is trying to do going on TV and trying to justify it too. It's just a really bad situation all the way around. I hope it's a valuable lesson. I hope a lot of coaches around the country looked at this and went, wow, it's not even worth it.
In what might be the most smooth transition in the history of this podcast, Todd, you took a look this week at coaches around the state of Washington after 7 weeks that have done the exact opposite of what this coach in St. Louis has done. You took a look at the best coaching jobs so far. You poured over, different leagues, classifications, and came up with 5 names of real big program turnarounds and real big kind of, commendable coaching jobs. Do you want to talk a little bit kind of about your approach to that and maybe some names of the most commendable jobs so far?
Yeah. And just in a broad sense, I mean, I took 5 coaches that impressed me the most, talking to some coaches in certain areas where they know the landscape better than I do. But there are so many coaches around the state who have taken 0 win or 1 win or 2 win programs over the past few years and got them on a pretty good track this year. And I don't want to say everybody else that's outside these 5 have done a mediocre job. And I know there's been people on Twitter that have come and social media that said, hey, what about this guy? What about this guy? What about this guy? And there are a lot of really, really good coaches out there that have done a fantastic job. Now, my baseline criterion was, I looked at 5 coaches who took over programs or who had programs that, A, we didn't pick. Now, a little of this is our problems and our mistakes in the preseason, prediction game. That's what happens when you sort of put your neck out there. So a team that didn't maybe have any expectations or very few expectations heading into the season was one criterion. A team that had been losing, had a few losing seasons in a row for a few years, And so I took, their 3 win total or their 3 season win total and divided it by 3 and said, here's the average amount of wins they've had in the past 3 years. And then contrasting it to what their season record was this year, and came up with some, I'll just rate Adam Schakel at Emerald Ridge. We picked Emerald Ridge to finish last in a very good league, a 4A SPSL. They've only had 3 winning seasons in their whole school history. Adam took over the program as a solo coach. He had been part of a committee in the past, but it's his first year as a solo coach. And they've done a great job. They're probably going to be the number 3 seed out of the 4A SPSL. They beat Sumner. They've beaten some other good teams that they hadn't beaten in the past. So we had him kind of ranked number 1. And so we could go down the list. Adam Schakel at Emerald Ridge. Christian Swain, I know you've talked to him. You've covered him down at Evergreen of Vancouver. He has sort of a track record of doing this. He's doing it in his first year at Evergreen Vancouver. Jeremy Thibault, who's a former Centralia quarterback, had come back to his alma mater, was very frustrated with the way that his former team had gone the last 5 or 6 years, and thought they were close to turning this around, and now they're 5-2 and knocking on the door for a crossover playoff berth. And then, you pick out a couple other schools. Bryce Connell at Riverview, they play in the same league as Royal and Connell, and that really tough league over there in Central Washington. They're 6-1, and then they play Royal this week, but, Riverview hadn't, they're coming off 4 consecutive losing seasons. And then a guy that I met for the first time. I really, really enjoyed talking to him. He's from West Virginia. He's kind of a aw shucks guy that moved out here when his wife got a, you know, an art teaching job, moved across the country, hadn't seen Washington, moved to Olympia, and now he's a coach at Wenlock in that really tough district down there, that 2B district with Napavine, Toledo, Kalama. And they're 5-2. And this is a program that I wrote about and said, hey, this is a team that that lost 39 consecutive games here a few years ago. So they're 5-2 and also knocking on the door for a playoff berth. So I just kind of pinpointed five coaches I think that deserved a little credit, maybe programs that we don't cover. And it was a fun project to, you know, talking to each of these coaches and hearing kind of how they built it and what's been kind of key in their sort of sudden turnaround.
Scorebooklive.com/Washington is where you're going to find that story. A lot of really good nuggets. I had fun reading it. It's definitely one that I would recommend. Dan, when you were in high school, your Prairie Falcons were a part of a pretty big program turnaround during your 4 years there. How much of that had to do with the coach, and what's it like, you know, being a part of a program that kind of turns itself around?
Well, for us, it had a ton to do with a coach with a new emphasis on off-season preparation. The previous coach, though he was a good guy, though he knew the game of basketball well, summertime was summertime to him, and that meant being out on the golf course and never really took advantage of any of the summer camps or really, you know, tournaments in the month of June. And so it never really created a culture of work around the program when I was down there. Right before my sophomore year, we got a new coach, Eric York, who stayed at Prairie for a while before he went to Heritage and then decided to step out of coaching altogether. But, you know, he had a different philosophy because he came down from Bishop Blanchette in the Seattle area, and he said, hey guys, this is what we're going to do. We're going to work throughout the summer. We're going to go to team camps. We're going to play in different tournaments. We're going to play in summer leagues, and we're going to be prepared for next year. And what happened is we had a few guys that were committed, but then what happened is more guys became committed. And it took a little bit of time to kind of weed out some of the truly committed versus the non-committed. But then by the time my senior year rolled around, guys knew what to expect. You know, we're going to have a full summer of workouts and camps and tournaments, and we're going to build that chemistry and that ability to understand what it takes to win. And we put it all together my senior year. So I think kids want to be pushed, and coaches that push kids are going to get the most out of them. I think it's so funny these days when you see these comments say, kids are soft these days. It may be so, but I think a lot of it does also have to do with the fact that coaches don't push them the way that maybe they have in the past. But on the flip side, maybe they're not allowed to as much because there are more restrictions. Maybe there are parents that unfortunately are helicopter parents that have their own thoughts and philosophies and don't allow the coach to really implement his philosophy because there's so much questioning these days from parents, and it trickles down to kids. So long answer turned to short, I guess would say yes, that my high school coach who came in after my freshman year really was a big driver in changing the culture and the philosophy of hard work.
Dan, I have a question for you. In kind of along those lines, as an athlete, did you feel like you responded better to a coach who was a heavy disciplinarian or more of a kind of a player-friendly type coach?
I would say, to be honest with you, a player-friendly coach. And the reason why for me personally is I always had a good work ethic. I always wanted to leave no stone unturned, to be prepared for my opportunities. And I understand that's not the same for everybody. And so, I think the best coaches are the ones that have a mixture of both. And I mentioned Al Aldridge, the Prairie Girls coach, on a podcast in recent weeks. I think he's a good example of that. And the reason I say this is, you know, a lot of people viewed him as a disciplinarian, and rightfully so. He had strict kind of guidelines in how he was going to run his program, and if you didn't like him, well, sorry, you weren't going to be a part of the program. But if you then take a look at what he was teaching, it was the details, it was the work ethic, it was the understanding that, hey, you got to do things the right way. And when you do things the right way over and over again, they add up to something great, and which is why they were successful for so many years. And that, in turn, creates from the parents and the players who buy into that, that creates a lasting relationship and a gratefulness for a coach that you played for. My wife, to this day, she'll throw out stories about things that happened in practice because she played for Al Aldridge. And it's kind of it's a good reminder of, hey, that's another example of a great high school coach having an impact on a person and a player young in their life, and that stuck with that person.
Scorebook Live held its second media day here in Southwest Washington. Dan, you were down here. We were in Vancouver. We were doing interviews. They had great participation from programs from 1A to 4A for boys basketball previews. Talked to players, talked to coaches, did some fun little exercises. Dan, what did you make of Scorebook Live's second media day, and what is going on with these media days? Where did you get the idea from?
You know, we're having a lot of fun trying to think outside the box and be creative with Scorebook Live and find ways to cover coaches and players and programs, communities. And when I knew that, hey, high school basketball season's coming up, I came up with the idea based upon the fact that, you know, I've been a part of media days as a player at the professional level, where it's, you know, a couple hour event where you've got interviews, you got photos being taken, you've got written Q&As going on, as well as my time as a broadcaster. I've been to media days for different leagues, and they've got sit down on camera interviews with coaches and players, talking about the outlook and the preview of the season, talking about different stories, you know, program philosophies. And then they do some fun stuff with the players, you know, to get them out of their comfort zone a little bit and to talk about something more than just the, you know, hey, I hope to have a good year. And so when we decided to do this with Scorebook Live, you know, started reaching out to different coaches across the state, and a lot of them had a definite interest in it. So we've held two so far. They've gone really well, the Spokane area, Vancouver area. And we've got a couple coming up. The Kingco coaches will be next week. We're working on scheduling Seattle Metro, which is going to be difficult just because of timing leading up into the season. But Pat McCarthy is doing a nice job helping to get that one scheduled. And then it looks like the South Sound area and some NPSL, SPSL schools are going to join in on a date that we're trying to find right now. But, you know, I think the biggest thing for me is, you know, coaches and players are starting to know what we're doing. They want to be a part of what we're doing. And I wanted to just try to be a little bit creative in how we did this. And there's been great response so far. We appreciate all the players and coaches. And we look forward to connecting with as many coaches and players before the start of the season.
Certainly. And you can expect to see a lot of these interviews and content and stories start to come out as basketball season approaches. I know a lot of people are focused on football. We're excited about the rest of the football season. We're also excited about the basketball season. So there's a little bit of both going on, and it was fun to be a part of the second media day here this week in Southwest Washington, and I'm excited, Dan, for what you have in store. After the break, Todd and I are going to break down week 8 in the high school football season, where we are gonna be and what we are most looking forward to.
Washington Federal is a bank based in Seattle that operates 235 branches, and it cares deeply about high school sports not only in the Seattle metro area, but across the entire state of Washington. head to WashingtonFederal.com to learn more or visit your closest branch.
Welcome back to the Scorebook Life Today podcast. Andy Buehler here. I've got Todd Millis on the line. We are going to cover some great football games here in week 8 of the high school football season. I'm going to be at one tonight, just a couple hours after this podcast publishes. But Todd, do you want to go first and just tell people where you're going to be and what you're looking forward to seeing this week?
Yeah, Andy, I mean, we're getting to the nitty-gritty here in week 8 where there's some separation in most leagues and there's some league championship games that'll decide league championships or divisional championships here this week as well. So, you know, the 3A PCL has been a really competitive league for a while with Lakes, Lincoln, and Bethel, and tonight it's sort of the continuation of the round robin late season tournament, and it's now, you know, Lincoln at Lakes. Now Lakes has already lost to Bethel at home, so they get the Abes at home as well here 2 weeks later. And they pretty much have to win to kind of stay in that league championship race. They are the defending league champs. And Lakes kind of handed it to Lincoln last year, just sort of physically beat them up in a big win at Lincoln Bowl. The rematch is tonight. It's going to be interesting to see with the weather. I know there's a little bit of rain and wind in the forecast Friday night. That could greatly impact the Lincoln's passing attack. With Caden Filer and that really good core of receivers. And Lincoln's probably going to try and run the ball a little bit more and then try and play a little more ball control and play action stuff. So it's an interesting contrast in styles of two really, really good programs, two of the best programs here in the last decade in the South Sound. So I'll be there Friday night. And then Saturday night's is basically the North Puget Sound League Championship between number 3 Kennedy Catholic with Sam Heward and all those fantastic pass catchers, Savelle Smalls, and they're hosting a team that beat them last year and has beaten them every time since they joined the North Puget Sound End League, and that's the Kentwood Conquerors with a great tradition, and Mike Bush, former Wazoo receiver, kind of guiding the ship. And you know, last year Kentwood was able to run the ball with Gabe Johnson. Had 200 yards, really controlled the time of possession. And yet, as quick strike as that Kennedy offense is, it came down to a last second Kentwood field goal. And Kentwood won at Frenchfield. Saturday afternoon's game is going to be in Burien at Highline District Stadium. I would suspect that you know, Kennedy is really going to be motivated, really up for this game, given what's at stake. It could be their first North Puget Sound League championship. They want to maintain a top seed, you know, for the state playoffs. You know, they haven't been to the state playoffs with this group. So there's a lot at stake for the Lancers at home on Saturday afternoon against a team that's kind of had their number. So I'm going to be at both games, looking forward to seeing two great games with a lot of young and senior dominated Division I talent.
All the questions about Kennedy going into the season on whether they'd be able to put everything together, especially defensively, they've essentially kind of answered up to this point of the season, but this might be the biggest league test for them. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how that game shakes out and following along with your coverage, Todd. This week for me, I'm going to Thursday-Friday games. And Thursday, this is about as good of a game in Southwest Washington as there's going to be all year. And that's when Camas, undefeated, number 2 in our coaches' poll, number 4 in our Scorebook Live staff poll, goes down the road to Kiggins Bowl and plays number 9 Skyview. Usually in the 4A Greater St. Helens League, which has been a 3-dog race for the past kind of recent memory, it's been this Camas Union game in Week 9 that's decided the league. Well, this year it's Camas Skyview, as Skyview really beat the brakes off of Union a couple weeks ago, 30-3. And, you know, as long as Skyview's been looking to break into the top 2 and win its first league championship in a long time, they're really, this is the year. They feel this is the year. They have a senior dominant class. They have most of their guys back from last year. They've got a line that's really been, solid this year, despite some questions going into the season about their size. They have a dependable quarterback in Utah State commit, Yaro DeVolco, Jelani McGee, undoubtedly a college running back. So they'll have a couple guys battling back from injuries. Cooper Barnum, their hard-hitting safety and wide receiver, he's battling back from an injury that caused him to miss their game last week. But he'll play. Their starting center is going to play after missing last week. So they'll play host to as good of a team as you'll see across the state this season in the Camas Papermakers, who are 7-0 undefeated and are still very, very solid and really haven't shown a drop despite losing their starting left tackle, Caden Steven, who's their highest rated recruit, a USC commit, who's been battling a back injury and will not play this week. So I'm really looking forward to seeing this game. By the time you listen to this podcast, the game might already be over. So head to scorebooklab.com/Washington for wall-to-wall coverage. Friday, I'm really excited for this one. It's a game that we had circled going into the season. Chiawana Kamayakin, really solid 3A team versus really solid 4A team. Two of the best out of that part of the state, the MCC's finest, so to say, this year. And in a league where, they're going to have to play, a district crossover against the GSL, this game for either team could go a long way. These are two out of classification teams playing each other, but at the same time, there are a lot of fun ties here. Scott Biglin, the head coach at Kamayakin, anyone on that side of the state listening to this will probably already know this, but those outside and those maybe on the west side might not. But Scott Biglin played quarterback for Steve Graff at when he was the head coach at Pasco back in, I believe his senior year was 1997. These two staffs are intertwined. The players all know each other. Two really good teams, both each with one loss. Kamayakin got blown out by Kennewick. Chiawana lost in a close one at Union early in the season out of league. So I'm looking forward to seeing how these two teams, who haven't played a ton of close games, stack up. And the one guy who whose name I can't have a single conversation with anyone related to these two programs and not have come up is Kamayakin running back Tuna Altahir. He's leading the area in rushing yards, one of the state's most prolific rushers this year with almost 1,200 yards through seven games, 14 touchdowns, and an 8.2 yards per carry. That's according to the stat guru out there, John Crawford. Steve Graff said that Tuna, who the past 2 years has contributed to Kamayakin's success out of their backfield. Steve Graff kind of said he was easy to tackle last year, that once you got a body on him, he'd go down. Well, this past offseason, he really dedicated himself to the weight room. Biglin said his weight room work ethic was off the charts. He dedicated to him getting stronger. He's a solid 215 now, 215 pounds. And Steve Graff said, man, do you really notice a difference? He doesn't go down on first contact anymore, and he's proved that throughout the season. So I'm really looking forward to these two games, both with heavy implications toward the postseason, undoubtedly.
Eastern Washington, we're coming for you. This is our first staff road trip east for a football game. I know you're gonna take off. Are you taking off Friday morning, Andy, to head over there? Or you heading Thursday night?
No, Thursday night after Camas Skyview. No, I'll take off probably midday Friday. Get over there before traffic out of the Portland Vancouver area, and Edgar Brown Stadium. I'm coming for you, baby.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna tell you, it's gonna be we talked about league championships and the herd kind of thing. Thinning out here right now. There's some crazy league, not only championship races, but playoff races over there. You know, there's a four-way tie in the 4A GSL. Those four teams, there's some head-to-head matchups over the next couple weeks that should determine the two spots coming out of there. So two really good football teams are not going to be in the playoffs. And like you said, they're going to cross over with the MCC. I mean, you could look at a matchup like Mount Spokane against Kamaik and two really good running backs in Week 10. Or you could look at a matchup like Chiawana if they do maintain the number one seed. And I think they've pretty much clinched it. You know, facing a CV, facing a Mead, facing a Gonzaga Prep, facing a Ferris. I mean, that's in a Week 10 game. That's a really difficult matchup for both sides. So it's, you know, there are going to be some two or three really good 4A and 3A teams over in Eastern Washington that won't make the field of 16 this year. So playoffs are starting now over there, and we're going to be there to see how it all plays out, starting with you heading over to Tri-Cities.
No doubt. You can follow along with everything we do, coverage of the entire state, all classifications at scorebooklive.com/Washington. There's some fun stories up right now that I know you and I had a good time really going deep on and working on. And then on social media, you can find a lot of our live coverage. I'm on Twitter at Andy Bueller. Todd, you're at Many Hats Millis. We are at SB Live WA on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook. So follow along. We're looking forward to bringing you great coverage of Week 8. And if you feel like we missed anything, drop a comment. You know how to reach us. Social media is where it's at. So we will be back next week for another episode of the Scorebook Live Today podcast. Until then, we will talk to you later.